The time is now 6:30. I'm calling to order the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee for the Southern Sarpy Watershed Management Plan on November 7th of 2016. C, a copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce that the procedure will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion or action. Thank you. With that, quorum call, please.
Present.
John
Conley? Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Present. Agenda item number four, adoption of the agenda.
You got to appoint an alternate for
Alternate for Thompson. Oh, yeah. Director Thompson does have an excused absence for this evening. Director Rich Teaser, would you sit in as the alternate?
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. With that, adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
We get a second.
We're second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Yes.
Moodle?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Bonnet? Yes. Agenda item five, the proof of publication. I have the affidavit of publication. It will be part of the permanent record for this evening's meeting. Agenda item six is a review and recommendation on the initial screening of proposals for consultant selection interviews. Lori Laster.
Good evening. So as you know, last month you approved the interlocal agreement for the creation of the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership. Sarpy County has identified areas of new development interest, and we are trying to get ahead of that development and to formulate a watershed management plan. We solicited proposals. They were due last Thursday. We received three, FIRA Engineering, HDR Engineering, and JEO in partnership with CH2M. And we recommend that you interview all three.
So moved.
Second recommendation.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion from the public on this item? Staff or directors? And for clarity, the recommendation is that the subcommittee recommend that the Board of Directors at the Fire Engineering, HDR Engineering, and JEO Consulting Group with CH2M Hill be interviewed by the subcommittee on December 1st, 2016. And just for the record, I'd say just in alphabetical order for clarity.
Is that 5 p.m.?
6.
All right. Any questions from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Woodle?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yeah.
Bonnet?
Yes.
John Conley?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you, Lori. With that, we are adjourned.
Okay, I'm calling to order the Program Projects and Operations Subcommittee. You both set a record there, Director Cole.
I'm shooting for three.
As you heard from Chairman Klug, a copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted at the rear of this room, and you heard the announcement of meeting procedures. They will apply here, and I'll not repeat them. With that, moving to quorum call, please.
Director Craig Conley? Here. Director Leahy?
Here.
Director Fisher?
Here.
Director Thompson?
Tim Fowler, will you fill that spot?
Hi.
Thank
I'm
you.
Here.
Director Fowler. And Chairman John Conley.
Here. Item four is the adoption of the agenda.
Move. Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Leahy.
Yes.
Director Teaser.
Yes.
Director Fowler.
Yes.
Director Craig Conley.
Hi.
Chairman John Conley.
Yes. We have here a proof of publication of tonight's meeting that will become part of the permanent records. And now moving to item six is a review and recommendation on the renewal of USGS maintenance agreement for the Papio flood warning system gauges. Amanda Grint, please.
Hi, good evening. So for consideration tonight is the renewal of the agreement, maintenance agreement with the USGS for the flood warning gauges. Bill, maybe if we can go to the map, just a quick refresher. These flood warning gauges were put in the Papio Creek watershed in 1993, and they've been maintained since then. In 2012, we did a big equipment upgrade, and at that time, we contracted with the USGS to do the maintenance and all of the work to keep these gauges running. So there's a map of the 22 gauges that we currently maintain in the Papio watershed, and then there's also a groundwater surface water interaction well at Waterloo that's a part of this agreement as well. And there's these gauges measure, each of them have some different parameters that they measure, but mainly they're doing rainfall stage, and a lot of them are measuring discharge at a real-time basis. And so there's a number of places to get that data, but the most user-friendly, I believe, is on the National Weather Service website. They have been a partner with us for a number of years, and they have, it's color-coded for flood stages, just like the Missouri River and the Elkhorn Rivers, but all the Papio gauges are listed there as well, and that's listed in the memo, that location. It's also available on USGS and our proprietary software as well. So this year, for 2017, the proposal is a district contribution of $151,520, and the total is $167,865. The USGS kicks in some money to match for through their cooperative water program, and then they also find some money through other programs, different programs, different years. This one happens to be the groundwater streamflow information program, so there's about $17,000 that they've put in to offset some costs from that program. So that it's just up a little bit last year. So for the maintenance of gauges, it's a district contribution of $121,500. That's up from $119,800 last year. So it's up just a little bit. I think it's a 1.5%. But then this year, what's new is we are planning a contribution of $30,000 to upgrade the transmission equipment. We talked about this a little bit last year, but we have radio transmission on most of the sites now, and they either go directly to the National Weather Service in Valley, or they go to a repeater station near Hummel Park and then get sent to the Weather Service, and that is the original equipment from 93, and so we've been slowly switching those out to satellite transmission, which is just going to be for us way better in the long term, more sustainable. So we did 3 sites last year, and we're going to plan to do another 6 sites this year. The good thing with the satellite transmission, not only because of just the operation of it, but that's what USGS uses on all their other gauges across the state. So as things, you know, if things break or they need to fix a piece here or there, they have all that equipment, and we wouldn't have to find it and get it to them. So that's new this year. And also, we just take a minute every year to talk about what a great job they do and the partnership with the Weather Service, USGS. They do some amazing work for us. And, Bill, if you go, there's some pictures. They tell me that it always rains heavy at night and on the weekend. And since we've been working with them, I really think that that is true. So Marlon captured some of these photos from August of this year, some high weather. If you go back one, you guys are back a couple of that first one. Thanks. You can see what Terry Schumacher looks like when you wake him up in the middle of the night to look at rain gauge. He's there in that picture. But that's the USGS measuring flow data on the peak flows, trying to capture those peak flows. They go out in the rain events, and they're trying to they're measuring flows at certain stages, at those high stages, and then they can create these rating curves where we can use all that data for calibration, future flood forecasting. It's really valuable data. So they're out. This is some of the money that we spend. So this is some photos of them out at work. We just continually update every year. We started with the new equipment upgrade, the contract with USGS. We've been updating the server on more of a web-based server to store all the data. We updated software last year. We're still training some of our partners on that software. Now we're working on the satellite transmission, and then another goal we have is to really get this real-time data out to the public via a public website. Right now it's a login-based, but we're working to make that a public website. So just want to let you know that we're constantly working every year to make this better. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Let's get a motion on the floor, and then we'll ask for discussion. We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Seeing none. Directors? Yes, Director.
How long do you think before the real-time data can be put on a public website? And will it be our website that it's put on?
It could be, or it could be a link. So I just want to give you an idea. The Weather Service data, it's real time, but federal agencies, as I understand, their websites can only refresh every 15 minutes at the most. So you're getting USGS and the National Weather Service, you're getting readings every minute, but they're just refreshing every 15 minutes. So this would be, you know, every minute. And I don't know. I think within a year, there's some money involved. We have to invest some money, and we have to really get a good plan of what we want or how we want to present all that information to the public and what kind of cool things we can put with it, like, you know, this is a 100-year storm with this type of rainfall. And, you know, there's a lot of different things we can do, so.
Do we currently link to the National Weather Service when there's flood events like this going on?
Is Emmett here? I think our website does have a link to the National Weather Service. Yeah, and it's just the National Weather Service at Valley. It's the river and lakes forecast page.
Is there any way to, like, make that sort of on our front page when there is an event forecast going on? So, like, that's when people are going to go to our website, right?
Right.
Stuff's in the fan.
I like that idea.
Any other comments?
It's still being built, so we can do it.
Other comments or questions? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Director Keiser?
Yes.
Director Fowler?
Yes.
Director Fred Conlon?
Aye.
Director Leahy?
Yes.
Chairman John Conlon?
Yes. Thank you, Amanda. Now, next is item 7, a review and recommendation on a mutual release and settlement agreement of Washington County from the Washington County Rural Water Project No. 2 Interlocal Agreement and third addendum to the interlocal agreement. Zach Nelson.
Good evening. I think this marks the fourth or fifth straight month we've had a Lakeland-related topic. This evening, my memo is in regards to the interlocal agreement that was originally formed between the district, City of Blair, and Washington County to form what is now the former Washington County Rural Water No. 2 system. Under the agreement, Washington County provided an initial project contribution of a little over $210,000 to the project. That was to oversize arterial mains and help in growth of the system. The City of Blair had made a contribution of just under $700,000 to oversize water mains and to allow us to pump water from MUD up to Blair during an emergency situation. Under the agreement, it calls for a rebate back to both the City of Blair and Washington County for each new customer hookup. The City of Blair viewed our Lakeland Connection project as one hookup. Washington County, however, viewed it as 525 hookups and thus demanded a rebate for each connection. So we have proposed providing the full outstanding balance of a rebate to Washington County. That dollar amount has been included in our SRF loan documents, which we've received approved funding for, and will be incorporated into Lakeland's rate. So essentially, we're taking out the debt for it, and Lakeland is paying for it over time, making that debt service payment. So to finalize everything, we've drafted a settlement and waiver release, which would then, once Washington County receives their final payment, it'll remove them from the interlocal agreement. And then thus moving forward, they are not entitled to any future rebates. So this evening, staff, we're recommending that the PPO subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute the proposed mutual release and settlement agreement, as well as the third addendum to the interlocal agreement.
I can move staff recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none. Directors? Ask Director Patrick.
So there's no more rebates just on the Lakeland or just in Washington County, the water system now?
No more rebates owed to Washington County for any new future connection. So on an average year, you know, when we add, you know, 10 to 15 customers a year, we'd owe them around $2,000 to $4,000. We won't have to make that payment anymore.
Zach, in that regard, is there any money that goes back to Washington County or Washington County Rural Water District Number 1?
No.
No.
Good. Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Fowler?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Director Leahy?
Yes.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes.
And on one quick related note, too, the refinancing the bonds has gone through, so I have some paperwork afterwards for the chairperson, secretary, and treasurer to sign. So that's all done now.
It'll be tonight. We'll sign them or Thursday night?
Tonight.
You've already acted. Right.
Okay. Thank you for getting that done.
Yep. I think it ended up being about a net present value savings of a little over $163,000. Definitely helped financially, and just housekeeping-wise is the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Okay, the next item is item 8, review and recommendation on temporary grading easement for Pier 15 at Papio Dam Site 15A. Lori Laster, please. Too many 15s here.
I don't know why they picked that name, Pier 15, but I guess it's going to stick. Anyway, can you go to the map, please, Bill? So when we started the design for Dam Site 15A, we knew that the future alignment of HWS Cleveland Boulevard would be on the very eastern edge of the recreational property, which is, can you scroll down just a little bit more? Which is this line right here. So we did plan to have that right-of-way in there, and we were going to use that future alignment as our temporary access road. When we started design, there was not a lot of development pressure in this area. It was not open. The City of Omaha didn't have services there. That has since changed, and there is now a proposed development on this piece directly to the east. Our temporary access road does not meet city standards. We were proposing to just build it at grade. No storm sewer, no curb and gutter, nothing like that. It was just a rural section, enough to get people in and out of the park until such time as development occurred. Well, now that we're here, the road does have to be raised through this section as much as 8 feet in order to meet the current city standards. And so the developer, Pier 15 LLC, since we've not even built our access road yet, they would like to request an easement so that they can come in and do the ultimate grading at this time before we go in and finish our access road. They would also like to construct a pier in the lake at some point, which does require some grading before we complete the dam. That pier would then be part of the park property. Managed by the City of Omaha, and it would be fully public access. So we have a proposed easement before you tonight. This easement is contingent upon approval of their plans by both the district and the City of Omaha. I can answer any questions.
Chair to entertain a motion on this item.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
Second.
We have numerous seconds. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? No comments? When do you think that subdivision is going to materialize? When's it going to fill out?
So can you go back to the map, Bill? So they kind of want to do it in two parts. This northern part would be single-family residential, and that's their first focus. And the way things are going, because this area up here is platted, and everything that they have platted has already been sold. So they feel that single-family residential will go quickly within the next 2 to 5 years. This will be kind of multifamily and commercial mixed use that they're not sure on as much.
I'd like to follow that up then. Are we incurring any expenditure by letting them go ahead with this or any future expense?
No.
That's good news.
Yeah, this is all on their dime to come in and do this grading. We would not do any of it.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Fred Conley.
Aye.
Director Leahy.
Yes.
Director Teaser.
Yes.
Director Fowler.
Yes.
Chairman John Conley.
Yes. Now moving to item 9, review and recommendation on the West Branch Channel Drainage Structure Cleaning Project. Martin Cleveland, please.
Thank you. Go to the map first. Bill, the big map. This project is located, first of all, Corsica Road is up here, 370 is down here, and this is the West Branch. And so there's actually three drainage structures, but there's actually five openings that we need to clean. And go to the next map, if you would, Bill. What we discovered, you know, we're in the process of, we have to every 5 years televise and then also videotape, of course, the structures on our levees. We have 500 pipes to do that, too. And when we find silt like this, we can't really properly televise them. You just can't, first of all, you can't see what you have here. Go to the next slide. And then also, in the result of this, you lose a lot of capacity. Go a little further down on the map, or on the, yeah, you can see these structures about a third full of silt. They're 7 foot by 7 foot, so that's roughly, you know, 2 to 3 foot of silt. So when you have three structures that full of silt, you obviously lost a lot of hydraulic capacity. This particular culvert drains the Midland Lake, Shadow Lake area, so it drains a big area south of 370. And so obviously we need to clean these out. We've been looking, in the past we've been actually using sewer jets to clean these out, but we found that this is just too big a structure to do that with, so we went out to seek contractors to actually do this work mechanically. Go to the bid summary, if you would, Bill. And so we received two bids. One was from Kirk Underground Technologies. They're out of Grinnell, Iowa, which is near Des Moines, I believe, and then Valley Corporation. They were low bidder. And if you go to the website that they have, as a side note, they've worked all over the U.S., railroad companies, other places, and they do the primary work they do is cleaning pipes, one of the three or four things they do. They do pipe bursting, other things like that. But they have mechanical devices like big auger-type devices to actually auger out the soil, which is, as you might imagine, is a lot more efficient than using a little water jet. And so this is probably the wave of the future for bigger structures. Most of the structures we can do with water, and they're like 36-inch pipes, 24-inch pipes. But these bigger structures requires a different technique. And so this is our first attempt at doing this, but we think it's going to work well. We've contacted some of their references. They've worked for Department of Roads in Nebraska, Carroll, Iowa, a variety of places around here. Of course, worked in Kansas, Illinois, other states. And the reviews are all positive. They're on time. They're reliable. One of the comments was that this is real deal. This isn't some company that doesn't know what they're doing. So I feel really good about going recommending them to you tonight. So recommendation, again, is to hire Herc Underground Technologies to do this work for the lump sum bid of $53,000. And as normal, this is all subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved by district legal counsel as far as the contract itself. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have on this. And
let's get a motion on the floor if we could.
Move staff recommendation.
Thank you, Fred.
Second.
We have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Directors? Yes, Director Patrick.
Yeah, so the inspections are mandated by the Corps every 5 years.
Right.
But these have been cleaned in 20, so did all of this silt just add up in the past 5 years since the last inspection? And then if so, what's the concern that, hey, for 15 years it wasn't silting up like this, but for 5 years it has been, is there a problem in the, with what we're draining from Shadow Ridge or wherever else it's draining?
There's a couple things that go along with this. Is we did inspect them prior to 2013. That was the deadline for the last time we did it. And the deadline, why we're doing this basically, is the Corps gives us money for repairs that we have actual, flood-related damages. At that time we did in 2013, they actually noted a number of inspections that they reviewed. They said they weren't adequate because the pipe weren't clean. So this time around, which is due basically 2018, is the last of the inspections. We've been making a real effort to clean the pipe first and then inspect it so we have good results, Otherwise, Corps basically is going to say results are poor, And eventually, if we do keep on doing that, what would happen? The courts say, you're out of the program. We don't want you in the program if you can't maintain your structures. But all that said, this structure has 20 years of silt accumulation, and some of that's probably because, you know, it's a developing area, and a lot of development's already occurred now. Shadow Lake is basically built up, the shopping center and the areas above it. So a lot of silt's probably already down there, but you have it's a natural process with culverts. They silt. Even the little 24-inch pipes, they all silt. The accumulation occurs, just that in a big structure it's more difficult because you got to, you know, you got a lot of material to take out. So we have a tendency, though, to put those things off because they're so expensive, so difficult to do. Small pipes, hey, it's $2,000 to sewer jet out, you do that. And so that's why we're here tonight to, and this is probably not the last you're going to hear of this, but the first attempt at using some mechanical means to get this cleaned out. And so that's kind of, I don't know if I answered your question properly or not, Director.
But what you just said at the end sort of led me into what my next question was going to be anyways, which is there's got to be some other ones besides just these structures that the issue is probably either just as bad or going to be just as bad pretty soon. And so my question is, hey, while we have these guys out here from Des Moines, why don't we get a little bit more bang for a buck to have them do a few more while they're at it, while they're out here, and we get just sort of a better price for cleaning?
We don't have, at this present time, I don't have a list of any other ones we need to do, but that's a good thought as we get, we want to kind of see how this works with these three structures and see if the process works well before we start, you know, giving the guy 100 structures to do. Mm-hmm. I think it probably would work well based upon, you know, they do a lot of this work. This is their skill set, but as we do these cleanings and so forth, we try to do in groups. We have did in the past, maybe like we've had these sewer jet companies do like 10 structures, you know. So you have competition among the different people to do them. And so in this case, we at least had one other person competing, but it's kind of a thing where I'm not sure there's much locally with a skill. And so I think down the road, you're right, maybe we do a lot of structures at once, but as the guys get into this TVing process, they see where the problems are at, and sometimes it's, they accumulate a few structures, and like now we need to take care of them, you know. But we don't have a lot of structures this big, but we do have some, you know, certainly on different projects.
Another thing we're going to do is look at the process and the equipment they use and determine if, in fact, it would be advantageous for us to purchase that same equipment and to be able to do these ourselves.
Right. Good point.
And so, yeah. But you have to see exactly kind of what they do.
They know that?
They do not, probably. I think any organization, you have to look at that. Do we have a big enough need to have that equipment on hand? And maybe we do, but we don't know that yet.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes. On this one page, you're showing the inlet. What about the outlet? You got to have a blockage to have silt stay in the pipe.
Right. What happens on these structures, Director Frost, is they have a flap gate, and that's at the end of the pipe. And, of course, if you look at this pipe right now, you see the gate basically is black because it's, you know, the gate's down. What happens is you have high water vent on the Papio Creek, and the creek is up high above these structures. The gate's closed when that happens because it's a flap gate. And so the silt comes down and basically drops out right there at the gate in the pipe. It can't get out to the creek because basically the creek's high. When the creek goes down again, what happens a lot of times is water will kind of flush some of that silt out. So it isn't like it all stays there, but a lot of it will over time if you look at 20 years of life. So these flap gates are really the barrier, but you got to have a flap gate in order to keep it from water going back through the levee. So it's unfortunately, it's kind of the process that happens.
Any other questions? Yes,
Director Becker. So there's 500 structures like this. Not necessarily all the size. Are we the only ones that manage those structures, or do our partnerships around the metro also have their own structures to maintain? Do they have equipment?
You know, the some of the structures that go in the creek, of course, are owned by the various cities. They do have their own sewer jet equipment in some cases. Some cases they probably hire it like we do, too. Most of the structures I think we've been cleaning have been on our levee projects that are outside the city limits is what we do. Because a lot of the ones in the city, they're already urbanized and there's less silt probably. There's some gravel, but silt issues are more where you have development going on. And also in the ag areas, you have a lot more silt too. But I haven't really sat down to really look at how many of these are actually kind of joint structures. Sometimes they're joint structures. You know, we have an outlet section, but someone else has tapped into our structure with another pipe. And so we haven't tried to go out and try to invoice someone for maybe their share of the silt, you might say. We just have assumed it's through our levy, it's our problem.
Equipment on hand. No. If you don't use it very often, maybe their equipment's just sitting there not being used.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think they do, but we do. Follow up just to make sure. But it's kind of specialized stuff.
It is. What they're cleaning is primarily their sanitary sewers is what they're focusing on. This is a little different. Cleaning big storm sewers is not something that occurs probably as often with the city and with their equipment too. But it's something to look into and see what we can do there as far as partnerships.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Director Leahy?
Yes.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Director Ballard?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes. And that concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.
Moving ahead with the FPL subcommittee. Called meeting to order. Notification of the open meeting act posting, as said previously, is in the back of the room and outside the room with that phone call.
John Conley?
Here.
Ross?
Yep.
Woodle?
Yes.
Thompson?
Absent.
Okay. Teaser?
Yes.
Rich, do you want Fred Conley to fill in for Jim?
What's that?
You want Fred to fill in for Jim?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't think
Fred Conley?
Yeah.
Here.
I failed to state earlier that as normal, I will impose a 3-minute speaking limit from the general public without an adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Ross?
Yeah.
Woodle?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of the meeting. Moving on, discussion number 6, discussion of draft fiscal year 2016 audit, Terry Fry and Gene Guerra, HSMC Horizon.
Good evening.
And welcome.
Good evening.
So Terry's handing out a high-level overview of the 60-page audit report and financial statements that are obviously in the packet and presented here. And I just want to go over that briefly with you and then answer any questions that you would have. Again, our audit covers the financial statements that you have here. An audit is an overview of the financial records and verifying the accounts and balances primarily as of the end of the year. We don't look at every transaction and every contract or detail, but it's done on a sample basis in accordance with the general accepted auditing standards and government auditing standards. Our opinion on your financial statements is presented on page 1 and 2 of the report, and what that opinion says is what we refer to as unqualified opinion, and that says that these financial statements, that your financial statements, do present fairly in all material respects the financial position and operations of the district for the year ending June 30, 2016. That's the same opinion you've had in the past, and what you all expect and hope for and work so hard for. In addition to that, at the end of the report, on pages 54, starting on page 54, there's two other reports that are included in this from. Those reports are on internal controls and compliance. The first report is general internal controls over your financial reporting and the process of your financial accounting information. That report says that we did not identify any matters of non-compliance with general laws and regulations during our audit, and that we did not identify any material weaknesses in your internal control system. And then the last report following that is our report on your federal programs, which require specific programs and testings when you receive and expend more than $750,000 of federal funds in any given year. And that report is actually an opinion on compliance. So we had one major program that we were required to test and found that in our test work overseeing that program that the district complied with all the applicable regulations that we're required to test. And then our report on internal control says that your controls over compliance, we did not identify any material weaknesses to report to you on that. So that's in essence the reporting that comes from us. All the information in between is a financial information that is your information and that Carrie essentially prepares and then we audit it. We did not identify or make any adjustments to her records or information, so that's a very good thing. That's what you aspire to for and work for, but I can tell you that most governments don't achieve that. So I just commend Carrie and her team for working towards that goal and achieving that. So in addition to that, there's another report that you don't have that we'll have coming forward with you. It's a required report that's going to just explain our relationship and information of what we did and how we worked with management. And anyway, there's no findings in there. It's just an annual report, just like it's about a two-page information of just communications of relationship between auditor and auditee. And so that will be coming to you. And then I just wanted to highlight a few other recommendations or observations that we had of the district. So we talk about internal controls over the years, and we've talked about those many times over the years. And again, we did not report any material weaknesses in your internal controls. That doesn't necessarily mean your internal controls are perfect or ideal. There are still some weaknesses, and that's just the result of having just a limited number of staff and nothing more. The controls that you all have in place for the staffing level you have are very good. And actually, you did some things to tighten up some of those controls this year. But just want to inform you that you could improve your controls, but it would require some additional staffing. And obviously, that's as the district grows, maybe that's a possibility of using some people in some part-time roles or part-time capacity to improve some of those controls. But again, it's not a material weakness we're reporting, but there are some opportunities to improve controls and. We can look for ways to continue to help the district manage and improve its controls, even as we do this year, within the structure you have. The second thing I wanted to recommend or discuss is this report that you have here is your annual financial statements and some supplementary information of what we refer to as basic financial statements. And with this is good and complete information, but it's not as comprehensive. There's another step up in a financial reporting, and that's called a comprehensive annual financial report. What that reporting would do is it provide more statistical information and more ramped up management discussion and analysis on the front end, and then more statistical information on the back end, looking at more of 10-year trends and statistics. To help the user really understand more about the district and where the monies have gone and how they've been spent and how you relate to other entities. So that would be something I would recommend that we at least have a dialogue and consider doing. It just provides the public more information and about what you're doing and all the programs and operations you have going on. So that would be something to consider down the road. And I know I've talked with some of you about that in the past. The last thing I just want to point out is that overall, one of the things we do test in compliance, again, along with a number of other things, is just the budgetary compliance. And overall, the district complied with the compliance with its budget, adopted budget. You'll note in the report and in my summary there, there are two individual funds that did overspend its budget, but that's not, when you look at the budget, you look at the overall budget for the general fund and overall budget for your proprietary funds. Okay, so overall compliance was fine, but there were two funds where individual funds were overspent, and you know the one was just a small fund, and there's minimal dollars there. The other fund, you don't budget for depreciation, And I think we've had this in the past, and depreciation was in there, and then there was on the that's on the Washington Rural. There was the settlement agreement that was not budgeted for. So depreciation and the settlement that you agreed to, those were the two reasons you were over on Rural. The other one was the Elk Pigeon Creek Drainage Fund, and there that's a very small fund, a very small amount that was overspent there. Carrie, do you want to add anything?
It's a pretty good year.
So with that, I'd be glad to, if you want, we could certainly look at some of the numbers and go into those more details, but I think you've seen those in the past because we did not make any adjustments, but we'd be glad to do that or answer any questions.
Anybody have a question for the Patrick?
Yeah, I may have missed it. I was reading something else, but the required communications to governing board, separate letter to be issued, important information, what's that?
Yeah, that's a separate report when we'll issue when we bring it to the full board. It just is it's communication that explains what your responsibilities are, what ours are, that we did not have any disagreements with management, we did not use any outside auditors, and you did not use any outside consultants. There were no adjustments that we made during our audit. There were no internal control weaknesses. So many things I've just talked about, but there'll be a formal letter that'll have some more communication in it.
On Thursday.
I can have that on Thursday. Yeah.
The final one.
Or next month.
Right.
Next month. This is going to go through next month. Right. Yeah.
The final will be presented and adopted in, if you so choose, in December, and then that's submitted to the state.
Right. So it'll be in that December.
Right.
Any other questions? Director Connelly.
Just a question for Carrie. Are you expecting us to take any action tonight, or is this just informational?
No, this is just an information-only item.
Anybody else? I'm sorry.
You mentioned one of your recommendations is to hire additional staff, do additional forecasting or comparisons to other similar entities. What entities would have their information available to even compare?
Yeah, and I probably misspoke there a little bit. It's not really comparing other entities. It's just incorporating information into the comprehensive annual financial report. So when somebody looks at the district, it'll say, what's the overlapping debt for the taxpayers? So what's your debt, and then what's the other debts of the districts that they're in there so the taxpayers can see kind of, okay, of the overall debt that they're paying or debt that they have, what portion is for the NRD, what portion is for the county, what portion is city. So it's not really a comparison of other districts. It's really just comparison with the other governmental entities, where's tax dollars going and where they're being spent.
Further comments, questions? I see Ms. Moss is.
I had a couple questions.
Why don't you come up, please?
I guess really just a couple clarifications, and I'm going to go ahead and read them out loud, and if you want to respond. Sean Malotz, 10404 North 132nd Street. On page 14, I'd just like to get the detail on the asset sale. I wasn't sure if it was one item or several. Page 17, which is also on page 45, just some detail regarding the negotiated settlement for $75,000. On page 45, a little clarification on the miscellaneous income of $392,000 for Thurston County Rural Water. And then on page 31, I'd like a detail regarding the due from other agencies of close to $9 million, and that it include what entity, what the balance due is, and when the expected cash is to be received. And I have them written out here if you need it.
Thanks.
John, you'll be able to respond to these by close of the evening?
We have 72 hours to respond to any. Sorry? We have 72 hours to respond to any requests. So when it fits into the regular workload, we'll respond. If we can do it sooner, we'll do it sooner. But typically, we have 3 days, according to statute. Also, just one, you hear, especially during campaign time, that government should be run like a business. But okay, so if you look through this audit, the There's no adjustments. There's no significant weaknesses. There's no significant material weaknesses. No significant findings. The net position has improved, which means the overall financial health of the organization has improved. Capital assets are up. Long-term debt is down. A lot of companies around the country would enjoy that particular report. So when we talk about running government like businesses, Carrie and your staff, good job, and the rest of it, because it takes everybody to get to these particular points in time. So the audits used to be, for those that weren't here, the audits used to be kind of nightmarish a little bit. But then when Carrie came on and we got things cleaned up and buttoned up, so you have 2.5 people that do that every day. So, and when you talk about hiring more people, obviously you talk about increased costs. So you either have to find those resources by cutting programs or projects or raising taxes. So to do that work for that few people is very commendable, and it should be. We should be waving the flag because these audits are very clean. And so hats off to you guys.
Thank you very much, Sean. I guess we'll move ahead then. Huh? Item 7, review recommendation. Big Happy Old Channel Project, former Master Tune signed license agreement with Falcon Ventures of Marion, Inc. Time estimation. Martin, please. Good evening, Martin.
Good evening. Thank you. This is a map that shows where it's at. I don't know if you can zoom out a little bit, Bill, or not. But 84th Street is located right here. This is in Omaha. Grover Street is along this street, and then I-80 is down here. So the district, when they purchased land for the Channel Project years ago, there was a sign in that property right here. It was called Mastertune at the time. This business used to be called Mastertune. So we think, we really don't know for sure, but we think that probably there was agreement of sorts that allowed that sign to remain in the channel right away, and it was used by Mastertune. And when they went out of business, the signs remained. There wasn't any really change to the sign. This property was bought by Autoglass Now this last spring, and it's a company that's throughout the U.S., and they want to use this sign, and they have contended that there was a right to that sign. So there's agreement that was approved by the board in June that allowed the sign to be renovated. Well, as the summer went on, we saw that the sign wasn't being renovated quickly, and so we went in and contacted Autoglass Now through a letter. Sent a letter in August of 2016, and we had also heard from the city of Omaha through an email that there was some comments from a sign company that they thought the sign was not structurally maybe safe or something like that. So we asked them to get a structural analysis of that sign or structural evaluation of the sign and complete the work to rehabilitate it by November 15th. And so in late October, you go to that letter from Autoglass Now, Bill. Late October, we received a letter from Autoglass Now. Scroll down a little bit further. And it also included the structural evaluation of, there it is. This was from their attorney. It's always a good sign you get a letter from an attorney. What basically happened, I think, in the process here is the email from Pat Schusler with American Auto Lift and Sign Service kind of tainted the local sign industry out in Omaha. No one wanted to work in the sign until this was dealt with by the structural engineer. And so this analysis was then was included in this letter, and they've asked more time because it's time to get this structural evaluation the second time. And so now they're down the road further. They're asking to the end of the year to complete this work. And so let's go to the next photograph. People, have questioned what the sign looks like, and the sign is, as you can see in the photographs, and I'm sure you've looked at the information, is basically cosmetic, is what the structural engineer is saying, and I have to take his word for it. He's a PE, that he knows who he's talking about, but it's a cosmetic thing. It looks ugly, certainly, but this agreement calls for them to basically redo this sign. It's going to be a new signboards, be repainted, and so the sign will look different than it does today. No doubt it's taking a long time, and the staff is getting frustrated with it too, but We would recommend that you would give him until the end of the year to get this completed. And if he doesn't do it by that time, the sign comes out. It just, that's it. We've had given enough time to get this done. If he doesn't get it done, his time is over with. But I think in the discussions with him, I think he's wants to pursue this and get this done in a timely fashion by the end of the year. So happy to answer any questions, and that's kind of the summary of what I wanted to present to you tonight.
Any questions of staff?
Move
Director John Connell.
You want to get a motion for
it? Yes, let's get a motion. For it. I move approval of staff recommendation.
Go ahead.
Is there any way they can do an end run on this by transferring real estate ownership into another corporation so that the clock starts over? Are we pretty firm on the deadline?
We have an agreement with this particular entity, so if they violate that, take the sign down.
They don't have the right to transfer that to somebody else?
Right.
Good. Thank you.
Agreement actually doesn't have any deadline in it as a side note, just so you know that. We're, in a way, we're bluffing here a little bit that we won't get this done, so there isn't a firm deadline in the agreement. In hindsight, we probably should have had something like that, but there wasn't one. So keep that in mind, too, as you make a decision that, you know, there wasn't really a firm date in the agreement. But we're telling them, be reasonable about it and get this done and get it over with. And so I think they want to advertise their business. They want to have a sign up that actually advertises it, so it's in their interest to get it done, too.
I don't know how many times this thing has come before us, but it just seems like it just keeps coming up and coming up over and over and over again. Frankly, I'm getting more annoyed with it.
Staff is too. we wish we'd never seen this sign. Quite honestly.
Any further comments?
I have a comment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's kind of annoying to have issues come back and not be resolved, but for this business owners, very annoying to them. They've contacted a number of sign companies to get quotes, get estimates, and things like that. And what they're receiving is a lot of runaround, some of which, not to a great extent, comes from us, and a lot of it is coming from the city and the county. Mm-hmm. So this is a case where you've got multiple jurisdictions with their own opinion as to what the sign ordinance, how it reads, the laws are. The sign companies are saying, well, it, you know, falls into a city and it might belong to the NRD and so forth, and so they don't want to touch it. So this company is having to go back to these sign companies and ask them to, you know, just trust them and believe that they have the right to redo this sign. It's been frustrating to them. It's caused a lot of delay. The miscommunication between the jurisdictions are causing delays for this company. So I would say let's give them 90 days, extend this to January 31st, and I would ask the committee to, somebody on the committee to extend that. Otherwise, I'll be motioning that on Thursday night. But we need to really make it crystal clear, whatever we do to this company, that they have the right to go ahead and proceed, maybe issue a letter so that they can take it to Neon, Omaha Neon Sign or others that they've talked to, and get the work done. It's also a very busy time of year for the sign company. So even if they get a design, approve it and stuff, it takes a couple months to get that work done if they order the work that they want to have done to this structure. That's all. That's my comment.
In general, would the staff be in favor of giving an additional 30 days?
I don't think we would have an issue with it. We're reacting because I've heard a lot of comments from citizens
Directly.
And board members that people are saying that this is ugly, and you know, the company has the lease agreement to take to whoever vendors to repair the sign, and it clearly states that they've got the authority and right to repair it. So I don't know how we make that clear to the sign folks. And then the city, we've been in communication with them, but they're the ones that notified us that it was ours to begin with. So, but I mean, we have no problem with it, but we just to let everybody know, we continue to get complaints that this is an eyesore and it needs to go away or fixed. And so that's why we're responding to it. So if whatever you guys want to do, we'll of course execute it.
I'll make a motion to amend the staff recommendation and extend it an additional 30 days to January 30th, 2017, in cooperation with Director Bonnet's request.
I'll second it. But I have a question. Do they think they can get it done in the time that you originally agreed?
In their letter, they asked they said the end of the year. They asked for time to the end of the year in their letter, so I assume they think they can get done by the end of the year. But I agree. I echo what Pat's saying. They're having problems finding people to do it.
Okay.
So
don't forget you're involved in the sign company, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those of us who've been running for office understand.
Just I did have to get involved in that conversation and talk to Andy Nelson at Omaha Neon Sign and they're going to have to get an order in, like, yesterday. But it's going to take them because they're super busy.
Okay, if you want another 30 days, give them another 30 days.
It's in my district. I've taken numerous phone calls, but it doesn't cost us any money to allow these folks to try to do the best thing, and they get a bump in the road. So, you know, it's been up this long. You know, a little bit longer is not going to kill anybody, and it's no money out of our pocket. And they know they want to get a nice, shiny sign advertise for them. They're in business too, so that's just let's give them a little time to resolve this.
Okay.
Director Connolly.
I think we're giving them a 30-day advance in probably the coldest month of the year where working is even going to be difficult at that point. If we want to give them an extension, I would think we'd be better off to give them one that would be more meaningful so they have opportunity to get it done. They can't get out there in January.
They said they'd have it done by the end of the year, so we're giving them 4 weeks. Yeah, I mean,
up in the air, it's cold and the wind's blowing in January, so that's tough.
But they did pay for any further comments on the amended motions? Hearing none, any comments from the public?
I think we have to vote on your amendment, don't we?
Yes,
yeah.
Amendment first.
Roll call on the amendment.
Bruno?
Yes.
Fred Conley? Conga?
No.
Frost?
No.
Caesar?
Yes. Will that pass 3-2?
3-2.
Okay, main motion.
As amended.
Any further comments? Roll call.
Fred Conley?
Conga? Yes.
Frost?
No.
Poodle?
Yes.
Sherper?
Yes. Thank you.
Just to make sure I understood, is it January 31st or 30th?
Well, I said 30th. I couldn't remember if it was 31 days or not.
It's 31 days. Okay, end of January. Okay.
End of January. Good. Fair enough. I'm sorry.
31st. Okay, I'm sure.
It might be warmer.
Agenda item number 8, review and recommendation of transfer deed to Prairie Queen Rec Area to the City of Papillion. Amanda, good evening.
Hi, good evening. So can we go to the first map with the aerial? I think it's the first map. The item on the agenda tonight is the transfer deed of Prairie Queen to the City of Papillion. So if you remember, through the interlocal agreement, we had agreed when they annexed next to Prairie Queen or 2025, whichever was earliest, we would transfer the responsibility of the rec features and the maintenance to Papillion. And they did annex adjacent to Prairie Queen. I was looking back, and it was in August of 2015, and they took over official park maintenance of the trails and the restrooms and the park shelters in October of 2015, so it's been a year. However, there was a lot of question about the annexation and some issues with Springfield, and I think all of that has now been settled, so we're actually ready to transfer the park to the City of Papillion. And there's nothing really that spectacular about the transfer deed. It's similar to how we handle all of the other parks like Walnut Creek, and you know, the NRD has the right to access the park at any time. We maintain easement over the dam, the outlet works, the flood pool. We have reviews over anything that occurs in the flood pool to make sure the flood storage is there for the structure. And then Papillion takes over the maintenance officially of the park. But what I wanted to look at tonight with you for your discussion is we will attach a legal description of the land we're transferring with the transfer deed for Prairie Queen. And I didn't even bring a map of the main Prairie Queen section because that one was pretty clear cut. It's, you know, what the district owned plus the surplus property that was declared surplus. We sold that at that auction earlier this year in February. So the rest will transfer. But the surplus property along Highway 370 did not sell at the auction. It did not meet the reserve. And so wanted to just walk through that with you. This was the area. It's about 27 acres that had been declared surplus and was up for auction. It did not sell. And there was someone negotiating on this corner piece here but didn't want any of this. And so we kind of went back and forth in negotiations, and we were preparing to present that to you, and then that person backed out of the deal. So now what we're looking at to transfer to Papillion, so this hatched area here, if we sold this entire piece, this would remain a flood pool easement. And in order to get to this parcel over here, you would have to bridge that creek or somehow mitigate for any fill that you put in the flood pool. And so we had thought originally that there might be a right-in, right-out access that could be allowed here because there was like a farm field access, and we thought maybe that would stay. But after we, you know, worked through all the marketing of that site and negotiations, and we got to contact a lot of people, that's not going to be allowed. And so the only way to get here is to come off of this access point and then bridge that. So this is about 11.7 acres, and this is like 15.3 acres. And so just, I think that in hindsight, after looking at this, probably best served that this part stay in the park. I do not think that we're going to get the value out of that. You know, we marketed that pretty heavily. We just did not have a lot of interest. So, Bill, could you go to the black and white map? Thank you. So what we're recommending to transfer is that this portion that was surplus go back into the park, this 11.7 acres, and then this 15.3 acres still be retained by the district for sale at some other time, or you know, if eventually the board chooses to turn that over to Papillion, that would be fine too, but at least we know there's some more development potential on this site. And just as a side note, one of the reasons that earlier deal fell through is that there's no water to this site. The water for MUD stops at the Shopco distribution area up here, and apparently there's nothing coming on Highway 370. So, you know, maybe at a point when there are utilities there, it would be, you know, suitable for development. But for right now, we're recommending that we transfer all of this with the rest of the park to the City of Papillion. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer or just discussion about that.
Question about it?
You know, I'm not going to rehash. We went around and around about this land previously.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of disagree with you, Amanda. My place is the salon plus the truck center and everything right across 370. They all have utilities. So bringing utilities to that site is not that far. We also haven't marketed this. We just took it to auction. And this is kind of we're learning a lesson here as a board. We had willing and able buyers for all of this property back then. They just didn't know how we wanted to sell it. So we went round and round. Did we want to list it? Did we want to auction it? And eventually we all decided to take it to the auction. But let's not just hand this property over now. Let's go ahead and list it. There's still time to salvage a little bit of the value here. My recommendation back then when we were talking about this property is treat this land like we do anything else. We got to manage to it. So politically, we needed to apply for a turn lane off 132nd, turn lane and access, ingress, egress off 370 for the first property, and then for the one a little further west to expand and improve that one. We would have tripled, possibly quadrupled that land value just with an improved ingress egress. At the time, we were negotiating WP 5, 6, and 7 with Papillion and trying to figure out when and if and when, certainly when, they were going to take the property over. So, the we were in a very strong negotiating position then, and we kind of still are. So I would say we need to take a harder look at this, go back, because the Papillion City Council members, they're willing to entertain whatever we were to propose. The utilities aren't too far off. It doesn't take too long to work our way through the zoning planning process to get some access going there. And we're not in any hurry right now to unload the land, especially for free. So here's an opportunity to revisit that whole, do a little bit of work, and maybe see that that land is best utilized.
And there's, you know, that's certainly, if we can go back to the other map again, sorry, Bill, that's certainly something, you know, to consider is keeping this and just transferring this water quality basin tract. The water issues are complicated. There is sewer there, I should mention that, but the MUD serves this west side of 132nd. Papillion serves the east side of 132nd, and then these are served by Westmont Water, which is a rural water, basically, company. They have their own water company. So that's all a little bit weird. So I would think you'd have, I don't know how the water would necessarily, I don't know who would serve that, actually, because we'd have to, you know, sort that out. Probably it would not be Westmont. What it looks like is it'll be MUD's area as they come down 370. That's
the
what we understood.
Don't want Westmont's water. I mean, that's
right. I mean, that it may go away.
There's pressure issues, there's quality issues, there's all
kinds.
There's
also the water extended all the way up to 138th, just on the north side. So you're coming down a hill right there. And it was the church that wanted that western portion.
Yeah, a
they
church.
Still might. And
they
the
may.
Bidders who won the auction were actually prepared to pay a lot more than they did. They were thankful to actually see it go to auction. They went in there, and then we didn't have too many bidders. So yeah. They're still on the table. They're still buying in that whole area. And if you want, we can just open negotiation or discussions with those same people.
Does the Department of Roads has to give approval for any access off 370, right?
They
the
do.
Papillion has
it's the state, yeah.
Yeah, the Papillion
it's
has
state.
No say.
And so many feet back on 132nd is also state, so that's
right.
So we'd have to
petition them to get any access.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, that's all certainly an option. You know, we didn't at the time. Really, it was kind of a as-is property because we're not really in that business of setting it up and zoning it and trying to get access. But, you know, that's, you know, it's just a possibility. It's not what we chose to do at that time.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Direct our legal staff.
Amanda, how close when we got into the auction for the property, were we close to our minimum bid?
We were not close during the auction on this property at all. In fact, we had one opening bid that was less than half of the reserve. After the auction, there was someone who was willing to pay the reserve amount, but only if they could purchase just this piece right here.
Because of the difficulty.
You mentioned somebody commented bringing water, MUD bringing water down along the east side there.
I think it's on the north side of 370 is what the future plan is.
Well, MUD will not come down there. That's a dead end for them. There's no place for them to go. There's no service off of 370. They're not going to be interested in bringing water down. They've got a park on one side and Papillion serving. You got Papillion servicing that other side of the road. That's not going to happen. The likelihood of getting MUD water, I think, is nil down there.
Is it? Well, we had that. After the auction, the negotiations that we were preparing to present to you before the gentleman decided not to follow through with that was on him. He said, here, let's set this up. And then the condition was if he could arrange for water, and he was not able to get that, you know, in a cost-effective manner, whatever that meant.
It would be very pricey.
Is that entire business part?
Yeah. On one hand, I agree with Dr. Bonnet that we are in no rush to give that little strip of land come in. Maybe we can hold on to that and revisit and rethink some things that we can do. On the other hand, I do sort of disagree with Dr. Bonnet and agree with Amanda, where what you're talking about sounds like prepping it and doing economic development. And the NRD is just not staffed with expertise to do that, and it's not in our mission. If that kind of plan, while it may be great, should be done by fulfilling, if that's the direction you want to go. They have the expertise. They have the ability to do that. So this is my comments. I'm not on the subcommittee, but I don't think we have to unload it right now. We can hold on, rethink some things through. However, if we are going to go with Director Bonnet's vision of it, if the board thinks that's the best thing to do, I don't think that we do that, even though it's a smart sort of business decision for the NRD to try to get the most money out of it. It's just not what we are sort of legally cut out to do, even by state statute.
You know, I would say there's certainly not a rush on this particular acreage to get turned over to Papillion, but there is some urgency to just transfer the park to Papillion officially. I mean, they've been doing the maintenance for a year, and so it doesn't have to be that piece go. We're just trying to clean up what we're going to attach to the transfer deed and get that official transfer going.
So basically, we'd be giving them about 11 acres of additional parkland.
Mm-hmm. If you choose.
If you choose it. If not, we'll hang on to it, and then you just transfer the other park.
And we would, if not, we would transfer just this piece here.
And we'll maintain it.
If we give them this plot of land as part of the parkland, do they have to keep it parkland? Because then it's with the rest of the park and be under those kinds of
rules. Is there any restriction that they can't dispose of it?
Because it would then be attached to all the rest, right? I mean, what's the...
Thank you. Pause.
So if we get it treated separately, anyways, maybe we could just hold on to it, give them the rest, and
decide what to do.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
On a
transfer from park.
Yeah, I think it goes.
How did staff arrive at the recommendation here, rather than revisiting our earlier discussion about listing the southwestern corner?
About,
and why not just list that southwestern corner? It has the ingress egress already there.
Well,
carve out the pool.
The motion was the resolution at that time was to sell that by auction,
right.
And it didn't sell. And so we thought after the fact that there might be something to bring to you with the negotiation with that individual, and then that fell through. So there really just hasn't been anything really to bring since that time. And it's really just the transfer.
I think the roads people tell us, whether it's Surfing County or Partner Roads, say the access to that site always going to be a problem. Because all you're ever going to get is an in, right out off 132nd. You're never going to get anything on 37 on that little piece to the...
I'm talking about the southwestern corner.
The southwestern.
There's ingress and egress already
right
there.
Right. Yeah, this will stay.
And 138.
Just carve out from the pool west and list that property.
Well, we'll need to bring that back for you to give us direction to list it. Because right now we only have a direction to auction it. That was an unsuccessful.
I'll have a motion
So we'll need to do that to actually list it. And then we'll have to accept bids from listing agents. And then you'll have to establish who, in fact, you want him to work on that. So it'll be a process. We'll have to take bids from all the real estate people.
Director Crew.
I think Director Crew. Do you know what the estimated value of that land is per acre?
I can say, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
we should right now.
All right.
Especially if we're going to talk about
it. Let's say it's half the value of what we got for the other. Probably.
Right. That's still.
Can go for about 50 cents.
It adds up.
Yeah, I mean, there's no. Yeah, I agree we should dispose of it. It's just the method you want to do.
We can say, well, we paid for it, right? That's public record.
Yeah.
Yeah, we paid $28,000 an acre.
Yeah.
Well, the action.
With all the questions, and we're giving it away. What's the hurry? You can always give it away.
Right. You can.
It's not cost us anything. They've already bought it. Let's wait and see what shakes.
Right.
Okay.
We can amend the motion to give the park or to deed the park with when we retain these two sections or this section that was declared surplus, and then we can come back and with a
a plan to dispose of the marketable, what we'll call quote unquote marketable acres. And if that's listing, then we will do that. And then we can kind of debate what you want to do with the eastern
part. Let's do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. I move to the effect of what Mr. Winkler said.
Just table it until we can make a motion on Thursday.
I think we want to go ahead with the parkland to the city of Pennsylvania. Yeah. And retain the two surplus properties that front Highway 37.
There you go. Because they're already declared, they're already declared surplus, so it's not part of the transfer anyway.
Is that amendment or is that?
There was an addendum to it that we're going to hold on to the additional
surplus property.
The surplus property. Is there any? Has been seconded. Is there any comment from the general public?
Steve, are you okay with that motion, or did you need it cleaned up?
Anything? Staff, directors, seeing none, roll call.
Yes.
Ross. Yes. Fred Conley. Aye. Shepherd.
Aye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our agenda at 7:46. I move for adjournment.
Good luck tomorrow.
Yeah, appreciate it.